like I started to realize that there's like magic spots all over boards that like will allow the board to feel different in a different way. Made it so much easier to like move the board around once I learned how to like move up and down the board and then side to side. The style was able to develop when I stopped trying to do maneuvers and stopped trying to like tear the wave apart, when I just wanted to like become a part of the wave. And if doing maneuvers and cutbacks and carves or off the lips or airs or whatever it is your thing, it's the moments in between the maneuvers that I feel like style can really shine. We say tuck the tush, push the bush, but right. It works. And that little tilt of the pelvis makes such a difference.
Welcome to the Basis Surf Podcast. Super excited because we got Leah Dawson in the house, and she's really just this master of all sorts of surf craft. I mean, riding longboards to fishes, mid-lengths, shortboards, rides tiny waves, shreds and tiny waves, and then also big barreling scary waves as well. So I'm very excited to chat. Thanks for joining, Leah.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, man.
Awesome. Well, just kind of wanted to start at the beginning. You know, where did you get into surfing? How did you get into surfing?
My start in surfing definitely came from my parents' amazing love for the ocean and in playing in waves. I grew up in Orlando, Florida, which is in the middle of the state. But my parents love the beach. And so we'd spend a lot of time on the weekends playing on the beach. My dad just put me on the front of his board when I was three.
And, wow.
Yeah, I just always felt comfortable in the ocean. And I was never too serious about it. It was always just like the fun thing that I did on the weekends. And then slowly I got more and more into surf culture and just interested in the whole realm, which for me that influence was the Hollywood movies Gidget and North Shore. That was like my idea of what surf culture was when I was growing up, which in both still like those films actually play a integral role still in my life, which is pretty funny to me. But
interesting.
I still you know, split my time on the North Shore and have been enamored of pushing my level of surfing and what I consider some of the best, most challenging waves in the world. And just the whole understanding of like the Howley on the North Shore, learning your place and really like respecting your place, you know. Mm-hmm. And then Gidget, I would just say, you know, I think for most women in the surf realm, if you've been doing it for longer than 15 years, you probably started at a time when you may have been the only girl in the lineup or, you know, one of very few. And so that kind of overcoming of making your place and like asserting yourself into an arena that that may feel very male dominated or may feel exclusionary. I feel like we're constantly in so many different ways coming to these points of like having to stand our ground and almost like build our own seat at the table because we want to be at the table, not because someone else is telling us that we're allowed to be.
Right. How sick is it then to see what's going on with the women, you know?
Oh, it's unreal.
Pipeline and
yeah. Yeah. That was, I don't know that I've had like a chicken skin or goosebumps that much throughout like a single day in my whole life. Yeah. I was filming, I've been a live camera operator for surf contests for the last 15, 16 years. So I was filming for the broadcast. And I remember just being so nervous that morning because it was big. It was really big. And I'm looking at the waves going, okay, like it's the last day of the waiting period. They had to run and the waves were huge and they were perfect. But it's also like, no matter how perfect it is, pipe's like the most imperfect wave. There's so much going on. So I was like just really saying my prayers for the girls to stay safe, because that wave is just so dangerous. And then as soon as, you know, the first quarterfinal went out and Katie caught her first wave and got spit out and got a 9, I was like, oh, it's on. Like these girls are going to show up today. And they put on, I mean, according to so many different guys in the industry, they put on as much of an entertaining show as the boys did.
You know?
And it looked different. They weren't doing as crazy critical takeoffs is like Baron and John were sliding down the face. But the stuff that they were doing was highly technical, highly courageous, and keeping in mind that a lot of the waves that those girls caught that day were like the first proper waves that they had gotten at Backdoor, or, you know, you could count on one hand the amount of waves that they've like proper waves that they've gotten out there. And they made it look like they'd done it how many times, you know? Every surfer knows that, like, even in a half hour heat or a 40-minute heat, sometimes it doesn't come together. And if your intuition is telling you don't go, pipe's a place where, like, you kind of want to listen to your intuition, because there's so many things that can go wrong. So unless you're getting like green lights inside, even if you're scared, I feel like there's like the override, you know, the line between fear and intuition can be murky sometimes. It's like overriding that. But yeah, it was amazing to see, you know, a few of the girls were really able to identify the good waves and then send it when that opportunity came. And I think that that's probably the hardest part of, like surfing heats out there, is like, how do you tell which wave is a good wave? Because the biggest scores are usually the ones that don't look makeable, you know, that look like closeouts. And, you know, taking off on a closeout at Pipeline is not like other places. You know, oftentimes it will drive you straight into the reef, which is very hard. And, you know, some of the girls, like even Katie, after her first heat, after that barrel that she made, she went for the next one and got so smashed, slammed into the reef, you know, and had the full spectrum of experiences out there. But you can't go out there thinking, oh, well, I'm just going to play it safe and not get pounded and get the wave of my life. Doesn't work like that.
You kind of got to send it, like you said, right?
Yeah. You got to send it. And even the best guys eat it. You know, sometimes you'll have sessions where you make every wave. And sometimes I'll have sessions where I make no waves and where I feel like I've got two left feet.
Right.
And we all have our days that things feel more in flow, and other times where it feels like you're just kind of going against the grain. So you really hope that the days that it's in flow, especially in competition for the girls, like you really want those days to feel natural and like you can call on them at any time. But we all know, like, yes, we can prepare as much as we possibly can, but you can't really determine whether or not a day is going to be like a super tapped in flow day. I don't think that's something you can force.
Yeah, right. Hey everyone, my name is Van and I'm an everyday surfer that's just obsessed with improving, and I wanted to take everything that I've learned, everything that I've struggled with, all the mistakes that I've learned along the way, and share it with you to help you become the best surfer that you can be. And I'm super lucky on this podcast, I get to interview the world's top pros, shapers, coaches, and take you along on my journey as I try to learn, uncover all the gold so you can apply to your own surfing. So hopefully you're going to get some value out of this. And the best way you can support me is just simply by sharing this podcast with whoever else you think may benefit from it. I also have been working really hard for a long time on something that I think is going to help a ton of people. I know that it was a game changer for myself as well. More to come on that over the next coming months. I'm super excited. Thank you for all the support. And for those of you just joining for the first time, welcome to the Basis community. Super stoked to have you. Well, what's crazy to me though, and I'd be interested to hear your opinion on this, is like even the progression over the first couple of years. I was in Hawaii for the first Pipe Masters where the females ran, the girls ran, and like the waves they were catching then versus now is just like, this is a whole different level. Like, what do you think it is? Is it just they're much more willing to charge?
Opportunity. Yeah, I think it's opportunity and getting, like Moana put it on the map that first year a few years ago when the first girls contest ran alongside the guys contest, and she was a standalone performer in that. And it was very clear and very evident that she had put time in out there and that she knew the waves that she was looking for, and she was able to execute on them. And some of the other girls definitely charged. Carissa charged, Tyler charged, and it wasn't for not going for it. But there's the wave is so dangerous and so sketchy that the opportunities that the girls get in the contests, that's when they're learning to ride the wave. And so if you don't make a heat, or if you only get like two waves in the contest, or like in previous years and even this year, prior to the finals day, the girls didn't get to surf pipe or backdoor. Like, they surfed tiny waves that, like, you know, didn't give them the opportunity to learn the wave. So I think it's just the natural progression. You know, a lot of the guys have had a lot of time out there in contests. And a lot of them, especially the visitors, will tell you that the best waves they've ever gotten out at pipe are during the contest.
Right.
And so without the contest, it's really hard to able to, I think what the trick has been for a lot of the girls is, even though they've been out in the lineup for the last few years and not necessarily getting the waves that they're wanting, they are recognizing the waves and know what they look like when they come in, and know where guys are sitting, and know what too deep or too far on the shoulder, or just what the right spot is. And it's every time you're going and you're making data points and paying like acute attention, even if you don't get that opportunity to go on the best wave. And oftentimes, like, if they're like, oh yeah, you go, then they're probably telling you to go on the closeout, you know, and that's a common story. Like, you have to earn your trajectory out there. But now, like, Moana will go out and she'll get her waves. You know, she'll get a handful of waves in a session or two, or whichever waves are calling her. But if people identify that she's going, they're not going to try and go on her and prevent her from catching the wave, because she has kind of earned her spot in the pecking order. But for surfers that don't live here and that only spend, you know, so much time a year, it's not an overnight thing, because even though you could be super savvy, like learning to barrel ride an endo, you try and then go take those skills to pipe and some things apply, but like, turn up the heat, just keep turning it up and turn it up. and then you'll find yourself at pipeline, and there's no faking it there. Like, you can't fake it till you make it at pipe. You have to do preparation, and you have to have technique and skill that you've developed other places, and then come and apply them. From my observation, you know, I think even Moana like learned to pack closeouts with her friends on the beach and learned to take steep drops, so that when the time does come at pipeline, you're not pulling back because it's going vertical.
Yeah.
You know, Go ahead. Oh, just like the number one thing is to if you want to catch waves in a lineup, is you can't pull back on a wave that you're in position for, or else you're not going to people are just going to go.
Yeah. You gotta go. You gotta commit. And people are, if they see you pull back, they're not going to give you a wave in the future. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think there's so many things you said there. There are so many gems that I just want to make sure that people that are listening, hear them, mm-hmm. Number one, you were talking about Moana, just packing closeouts over and over again to develop that skill. And I think it's so important to develop that skill in situations where the waves might, obviously they're precious, but you got to get your reps in somehow. So going for those closeouts is going to be key.
Yeah.
And the other thing you said, which was interesting, you were talking about how the girls would go out and they might not even catch the wave that they want, but they're really studying everything and they're collecting those data points and they're observing, all right, this guy went off on this wave. This is the spot. This wave was too deep. And, this wave was a good one. This wave wasn't a bad one. I think that paying attention to that when you're in the water is so key. And I remember during that first Pipe Masters, I saw Tyler, and I remember it was between heats. She paddled out. She didn't even catch a wave, and she came back in, and I was like, what is going on there? And then my buddy was like, yeah, I think what she's doing is she's just going out there to study the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably out there to catch a wave as well, but maybe nothing came, but she was probably just out there to feel it out. Okay, figure out my lineups again, get comfortable in this size so that when he was on, she was just a little bit more
it fires
dialed
you up.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because finally when that wave comes in a heat, you're all, oh yeah, like, oh, it's mine. I can go on this instead of being like, oh God. Do I go on this thing? Is this thing going to be a good wave?
Right.
You try and take that mental chatter, as low as possible so that the confidence can be just pinging,
right.
But a lot of it is I haven't surfed pipe much. I did when I was younger and we used to have the Women's Pipeline Pro, which always ran usually in March with pretty bad waves. We got fun waves a couple times, but never proper pipe. But I swam out there a few days ago as the swell was rising and went and body surfed. And even on a 4-foot day, that wave is so damn scary. It's unlike any wave I've ever witnessed. There's obviously slabs all around the world for the slab inclined and crazy waves that break. But no matter, 2 feet to 20 feet, when it's two, I heard so many people say after that day that it was small, that I was out there body surfing. Oh, keep getting smashed. It's always on the small days that I get hurt because it almost focuses more on the reef and gets even shallower.
Yeah.
So it's never without danger, it's never without an extreme rawness that, that surfers have to deal with and overcome. And when you see guys crossing their chest and doing their little thing before they paddle out, it's scary, And so for the girls to really step up and to want it. I think that was the biggest shift, is that now the girls really want it. Or at least some of them do. I want it in my heart, but my body's oh hell no, girl.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I could totally see that. Well, something you said earlier was interesting as well. You talked about, there's this process of, asserting yourself in the lineup. So, mm-hmm. What kind of advice would you give to female surfers, but really anybody that's not feeling confident out there, how do you think they should approach that?
I think, a smile always goes a long way in life. A smile always goes a long way. And oftentimes it can be really challenging in lineups. I feel like it's the biggest deterrent for people that are learning to surf, is to break through that time of the learning curve where people might identify you as a kook, which is it's really tough because there's not many sports where you can go onto the court and LeBron James is playing and you can play alongside him. You know, you can't go on the golf course and play with the best one, but
right.
You can paddle out into a lineup and like be amongst, you know, the best in the world. So in that sense, lineups can have varying degrees of ability. But I think the most important thing, especially for women that are learning to surf, is to pay attention as much as you possibly can to increase your visual study, to learn and absorb as much as you can of what's going on in the lineup, because that will enable you to catch more waves. And if you're going straight on a left and you take off on someone, then yeah, they're going to get mad because you don't necessarily know the rules. So a lot of it is, yes, assert yourself in the lineup, like paddle for the wave. If you're in the right spot, like, yeah, you can say, you know, or call someone off of a wave if, you know, they keep trying to burn you or go in front of you. But it can't just be a blind assertion. You know, if we're asserting ourselves by just going on every wave that we see, then it's not doing us any good, because then we're just there's the rules for a reason. And I think that a lot of rules aren't, it's not like you go somewhere to learn the rules of surfing, or there's some guidelines, I guess, online a bit about the rules of surfing, but there's so many that like come up in situations that it's a lifelong journey of learning all these intricacies. I think the thing that speeds up the learning curve and helps the most is to like be super, super highly aware of yourself and how you move on the board, and your surroundings, so that you can avoid getting in people's way. And if you can learn to do that, then you can learn to identify where the best place is to catch the wave that's coming in. And all of that, it's not just, you know, a trajectory that goes like this. There's so many, like, I think peaks and valleys in our surf ability of learning. You know, we'll start to get better in certain ways, but it's also very situational. It depends on the waves that we're surfing and the crowd that's around us. Because if you're surfing a beach break that's just dumping and there's no one around you, then you don't really have to assert anyone but yourself and the ocean.
Right.
But if you're surfing a place like Malibu, then, well, that's not really a good example because it's a free for all there. There's like the rules go out the door and it's like just something that you have to accept. I love that wave, but the lineup, gosh, it's dangerous. It's really dangerous.
Seems really hectic.
And it's the prime example of why surf etiquette and surf rules are so necessary. Because if not, if everyone's just dropping in blindly and there's collisions all the time, like, it's like, what if we got on the highway and no one ever used their blinker? No one ever, like, you know, did any of the precautionary stuff that are the rules of the road that keep accidents from happening. And I think that that's the main thing, is that like a lot of times, especially in the beginning stages of learning to surf, it's how do you learn in a wholesome way that keeps you safe and keeps others safe? That's the most important part, I think.
Totally. I totally agree. It's about safety. And it must be such a shock for you going, you know, because you split your time between California and Hawaii, going from free-for-alls in Malibu to, you know, pretty defined, rigid, clear-cut lineups in Hawaii. I mean, not always, but, you know,
well,
that
but
must
even,
be.
Even in Hawaii, I feel like here it's if you don't assert yourself, you're not going to catch a single wave. Like,
oh yeah,
there'll be a Grom on your inside in no time. And if you pull back on a wave, people that are out in the lineup will, like, I don't know, it's this weird thing with surfers that, like, people will, like, identify a weakness in other people in the lineup and, like, kind of prey on them.
Totally.
I've seen it happen so many times where it's, like, the same guy paddling on the inside of the same person over and over and over again. And it's hard. It can be really frustrating because not everybody is confrontational. Not everybody is, I don't like to say stuff to people. I don't, you know, a lot of people don't like to have that aggression side of things, you know. Surfing can be, and, like, I think is best when it's zenful and you can hear the ocean more than you can hear the intensity of the crowd. But that's not the reality for everywhere, you know?
No,
that's why we totally. Go on surf trips, but even when we go on surf trips, there can still be a whole bunch of other surf trippers, you know?
Oh yeah. You can get hectic.
Yeah, it can get hectic. So how do we establish lineups with more joy and more respect? That's definitely something I'm interested in.
For sure.
'Cause I think it's a social study, you know, like, why is this thing that we all love so much? Why does it lead to lineups that are often contentious and often, like, cold, not in a temperature wise?
Yeah, you know? No, I know what you're saying. It's like pure anarchy and we're all hunting for this same scarce resource. And, that just, combines to be, pretty, you know, a mixture that gets very challenging. Something you said earlier that I thought really resonated with me, and I'd be curious, you know, you talked about in the context of etiquette or just asserting yourself about just really closely studying everything that you're seeing in terms of a lineup and then in terms of your body as well.
Right.
Is that how you also think about, like, improving in terms of technique or, you know,
oh, for sure.
How do you think about that?
Yeah. I think surfing can kind of be like a golf swing. You can't focus on 10 different elements at once. At least when you're on the wave. But for someone that's in the earlier stages, I always like to help people develop their paddling skills as their, like, ticket to freedom. 'Cause if you can't paddle efficiently and you're exhausting yourself, your ability to catch waves is minimized, your ability to have longevity in the session is minimized, and, you know, if we just lay down on a board and try and start paddling on our own without any idea of the technique that is involved, like, it can be such an exhaustive exercise. But if we learn to paddle with our entire body and engaging our core and our pelvis and our legs into the paddle and our whole back line into the paddle, then it can become more of like an endurance, you know, almost like a runner's swimmer's stroke where unless you're at a full out sprint, you can paddle for hours. And that's the goal, is to be able to develop technique. And then with the right technique, you can develop the muscle endurance for it. But I feel like that's always the, like, main place to start, is to, one, get comfortable paddling, and two, get comfortable, like, sitting up and down on your board. And the faster you can do those two things, like, it can shave off 5 years of learning how to surf. Because if you're catching 10 waves instead of one wave a session, think how many sessions it would take, you know, to get that experience. But as you take that further and you start paying attention to different elements, for me, what's always helped be a benefit is choosing one thing to focus on for a session, whether that's your back arm or your breath or your front foot or trying to, it depends on the waves and the board that you're on or whatever, if it's a certain maneuver. But every surfer will tell you, like, oh, I wish I could have that wave back, because you're never quite going to get that same opportunity again. Right. And, you know, a surfer that does airs might only get, you know, two or three attempts in a session. So the practice and repetition part is, I feel like that's the big challenge of surfing, is that it's really hard to kind of get that repetition. So if you simplify the progression into elements that you can focus on for each session, then I think that it really helps develop the muscle memory that it takes in order to ride a wave successfully and to learn to move your feet into the right position of the board. I think that that's the biggest key of surfing and unlocking people's surfing, is unlocking your feet. Because if your feet are in the same place the whole time, good luck. Good luck. Even if you're on a shortboard. If you watch the shortboarders that are really good, their feet are never staying in the same place. Even if they're moving that much, there's always going to be an adjustment, because same like a skater, you know, you don't see a skateboarder keeping their feet in the same place to do every trick. You know, they're constantly moving their feet. So I would say if you're, you know, wanting to increase your surf ability, really put some emphasis on your feet and moving them around.
Any tips on getting those feet moving? I get a lot of people asking me, saying, oh, I can't move my feet. You know, what would you recommend?
I would say... you don't have to do it in a public space. Do it in your bedroom or in front of a mirror and pretend like you're surfing. Like, literally visualize yourself on the wave and then start moving your feet. And it's like a super quick, like, waiting and unweighting off of each foot in order to shift it into the place where you want to be. And the reason why we need to move our feet is because unless you're on like a tiny shortboard that has a super narrow tail that your foot reaches from side to side of the rail, then the leverage that you need in order to turn the board is only going to be able to be controlled by shifting your foot into the position. But even people with big feet, that their feet still stretch the whole, or, you know, go from rail to rail on the tail, they're still moving their back foot, because there's speed that you can get from bringing the foot forward, but you lose the turnability. So if you want to do a hard carve, you have to go up the face of the wave with your back foot a little bit more forward. And then as you're transitioning back into the carve, that's when your back foot slides back as far as you can get it, depending on the board, to the tail in order to turn it. So I would say, like, practice just barely moving your feet. It's almost like a dance move. Most of surfing and shortboarding, you're a little bit more equal in your weight distribution. And it's almost like you're going forward and back on your feet as you're going down the line. If you're pumping, you're almost like pumping with your front foot, and then when you're turning, you're more like going on your back foot. Whereas if you're on a longboard, if you lean forward, the thing is probably going to shoot out behind you, or you're going to lose momentum, or you're going to press the board into the wave, and it's not really going to go the way that you want. Almost the whole time when you're longboarding, you're leaning over your back foot, and your center of gravity is set back. And I feel like between the shortboard and longboard realm, it's kind of a free for all for how the body weight gets distributed in order to execute different maneuvers or different postures and whatnot. But I would play with just moving the back foot closer to the front foot and then shifting it back, you know, narrowing your stance and then widening your stance as you're on the wave. And usually the middle of the board is the fastest part of the board. So if you're shifting your back foot up more to the middle of the board, then that's kind of more of a speed maneuver. If you're shifting it back, you're on the brake. If you're on the tail and you're, or if your back foot is on the tail, then you're pretty much on the brake, or you need to be turning. But if you're leaning on the back of the tail, then it's picking the nose up. Oftentimes I'll see people ride the board solely just from the back, and the front of it is almost bouncing in front of them. Yeah. So you want to make your turn, whether it's a bottom turn or a top turn, and then move your feet more towards the center of the board. It takes time, but it's telling yourself, move your feet. It's literally, there's so many mental cues that I feel like happen in surfing, of like, you have to tell your body to do what it is that you want to start doing. And then once you develop the muscle memory, it kind of goes more like, oh, I'm going to go to the nose, or I'm going to turn, or, and your feet just automatically go into the right spot. But the learning curve of that, I feel like, can be shortened if you learn to move your feet as soon as possible in your surfing journey.
Right. And, you know, you're well known for riding everything, logs, mid-lengths, shortboards, and all that. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think riding that variety of surf craft it's probably enhanced, I mean, it just really trained you to move your feet a lot, right? Because you're riding a log, sure. You're just constantly moving it back and forth. So
yeah, I grew up riding both longboards and shortboards in Florida, and developing, learning how to crosswalk and you know, finding different places on the board that allow you to feel like you have control and speed and whatnot. And then once I started riding more single fins and eggs and fishes and all sorts of things, I started to realize that there's like magic spots all over boards that like will allow the board to feel different in a different way. And like on a fish, like you can still nose ride a fish, and as long as your back foot is closer to the inside rail, like you can hold strong and haul ass. You know, you can go really, really fast. And so, yeah, I think it's taking whatever apparatus you are drawn to, whether it's longboards or shortboards or foam boards. Especially when people are starting, I love it when people ride foam boards because it takes the danger element and like squashes it, or like significantly reduces it. I can still hang five on a soft top. You know, I have friends that's like ride Waimea on a wave storm. you know, I wouldn't highly recommend it, but it's doable, you know, and I feel like there is such a place, in like the surfing learning curve that, people would benefit a lot more from if they spent more time in their early development of surfing, riding a soft top that like kind of takes the danger element.
Right. It's like going slow away to go fast.
Yeah, exactly. And if you can learn to turn a soft top, then once you get on a board that like zips, then it's like going back, you know, if you're throwing a medicine ball or a heavy weighted ball, and then you go to throw a light baseball, like it's going to feel like nothing. So yeah, a lot of that for me, like that's what longboarding did to my shortboarding. You know, it made it so much easier to like move the board around once I learned how to like move up and down the board and then side to side, because it's not just moving up and down the board that makes a board move dynamically. It's so much with the side to side, you know, where our feet are on either side of the stringer. And there's so much to play with there that it's just fun. I encourage people to just start to explore it, of moving their feet in different places. And if you can think about it in like kind of like a seesaw mentality, then, you know, if I have way too much weight on this side of the rail, and you know, if you're kind of skiing the board, it's going to make the board operate differently. So it's trying to pay attention to where our feet are as much as possible. And then once we're paying attention to where our feet are, recognizing if I want to do a bottom turn, where does my back foot have to be? And then if I want to do a top turn right after that bottom turn, what do I need to do with my back foot in order to make that turn happen? Because even though your foot may only shift that much, it's the difference between you doing a really nice turn or just like flopping over. And yeah. and the minute differences are wild, and it takes a lot of time and practice to develop that muscle memory. But the more you tell yourself to start moving dynamically and trying to find new places on your board, I think the quicker it'll continue to allow you to create speed to you know, find new ways to move on the board. And even though the technique that it takes to ride a longboard and a shortboard and a mid-length, they're all very different, they all have very similar core values, I guess, you know?
Totally. I see what you're saying. And it seems, you know, you were talking earlier about magic spots, and it sounds mm-hmm. like you're just trying to figure out what that magic spot is on the board for mm-hmm. doing certain things, whether it's generating speed or doing a turn. And I would imagine right. every board is different, right? Like mm-hmm. riding a wide-tailed fish versus like a right. pintail versus riding, you know, a big square-tail log. Like the magic spots are going to be different, but you got to like figure out those magic spots for each of those boards.
Right. And they're going to be different for you and for me and for everyone else. You know, depends on the weight distribution and how tall we are. And there's so many different variables in surfing, but that's what makes it so cool.
Yeah, so fun. That is part of the fun. Well, I know we got to work towards finishing up because you got a busy day ahead of you. But okay. Last question I wanted to ask you is just like, how do you think about style? Because I think you have one of the most unique rad styles, and it's so distinct, you know. And I feel like, you know, there's a ton of surfers that, you know, cookie cutter is probably the, you know, maybe a wrong way of putting it, but, you know, like people's styles are, there's a lot of conformity in style, but yours is pretty radical, but it's awesome. You know, like how should people think about developing their own personal style?
I think for me, what allowed me to discover my own style was actually when I stopped competing, in like for the World Longboard, tour. And I started riding single fins. And then I think when the first sole arch I ever did, I was like, oh my God, that felt so cool. Not cool. Like I didn't feel like, oh, look at me now, I'm cool. It felt like the sensation in my body felt unreal.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, developing our own style is what makes our heartbeat, you know, what makes, what excites us. And, you know, when I was in my early 20s, it was like, okay, I'm into longboarding, I'm into shortboarding. Air's really, I don't think that that's part of my game. Like, I'm not going to put my desire and push to progress into learning to do airs, because I didn't feel drawn to that element. Now I'm looking back like, oh, it would have been really cool to be able to like look at that section and go, oh, I'm going to punt, you know, because now like instead of kicking out like I probably would normally do, you know, it would be like the section that I'm going for. But for me, what brings me the most joy on a wave is like literally standing there and like going fast.
Yeah.
It's that simple. And if we can learn to stand there and go fast off of like one pump or two pumps and just trim and highline, or just enjoy a really long drawn out bottom turn, or for me, the style was able to develop when I stopped trying to do maneuvers and stopped trying to like tear the wave apart, when I just wanted to like become a part of the wave. And then I think certain boards help, because if I was on, you know, shortboard thrusters the whole time, then there's only so much like you can sole arch on a shortboard thruster. You know, those boards need to be pumped, and they need to like, they need constant rail engagement in order to keep their speed and to fly like they can. But for all the people out there, you know, it's really, I encourage people to just stand there and feel their heart open, and whatever they want to do with their arms, you know, let it fly. Like be the bird that we all, you know, have inside of us. And if doing maneuvers and cutbacks and carves or off the lips or airs or whatever it is your thing, it's the moments in between the maneuvers that I feel like style can really shine. You know, the way that you pump and make speed, or the way that you hold your posture when you are standing up, or the way that you're stalling in the barrel, or all of these things. I don't know. I've always definitely been drawn to like yoga postures and like Tai Chi postures, and but also mixed with dance. My sister was a prima ballerina for many years growing up. So I watched a lot of ballet, and like really recognized how like extension and posture is everything in dance. And it almost seemed like the focus on posture kind of went to the wayside. And thank God for Stephanie Gilmore, because she's been like this through line of elegant posture while shredding, you know, while absolutely like putting shortboards to the test, you know, and doing carves with so much power. But how do you look so beautiful when you're doing that? Yeah. What is the elements of what makes that look so beautiful? You know, it's a combination of arms and hands and hips and knees and all these different things that you can't be like, it's not like an overnight thing, and it's not something you can force. It's just, I think, something that you have to keep practicing to allow. And for myself, it's mostly trying to get out of my own way and not over demand my body, and just allow my body to move the way that it wants to in the moment, because surfing, it's so fast, you know. Yeah. and in a moment it's like the wave's done oftentimes if you're in Florida. But you know, on waves, most people don't get to surf like a minute long point break. And if you do, God bless you, gosh. But it is, you know, just kind of allowing ourselves to get out of our own heads, and just if we can feel good just standing there, you know. That was some of the first advice that one of the first conversations I ever had with Jerry Lopez. He was pointing out some people that were surfing, and he's like, you know, I never understood why people try and do these radical maneuvers before they can even just stand there and look good. You
so
know?
True. Yeah.
And so
yeah.
True. Like, there's so much emphasis on doing the maneuver without any emphasis on the posture whilst doing the maneuver. So I would say, yeah, focus on your hips. With the surf retreats that I do with Cassia, we came up with a really funny slogan that I think is really helpful to get the stink bug stance out of out of our like protocol, or you know, out of the natural way that often people stand when they first start surfing. And we say tuck the tush, push the bush. But it works.
Nice.
It works. That little tilt of the pelvis makes such a difference.
Yeah.
Of your ability to maneuver. But I think the key of what it does is it connects the upper body to the lower body. Because if you're hinged at the hips and your butt's sticking out, then it separates the upper body from the lower body. And we're not able to really utilize the whole thing in one locomotive system.
Right. Right.
So yeah, I would say most emphasis is on the hips, especially if you're a female surfer. Like, we can learn to, you know, use our hips and learn to find that dance and that flow.
Wow, I love that. That was probably one of the deepest and most beautiful explorations of like what style is that I've heard in a long time. So
Cool.
Thank you for that. That was really epic.
Yeah.
I know that we're coming up on time here. So, you know, I know that you have a course on the inertia, about riding alternative craft, and it sounds like you have these pretty cool retreats with Cassia. Is there anything else? Like, how else should people get a hold of you, or, you know, anything else that you're doing that's exciting?
I've got a few retreats coming up with Cassia. We have a business called Salty Sensations, which is our retreat business. So you can check us there at saltysensations.com. And we're getting ready to launch, retreats for the end of the year, some in the Telos Islands and some in Popoyo, Nicaragua. And yeah, those are definitely really in-depth experiences that we work as hard as we possibly can to help identify different areas that people can improve. And over the course of the retreat, help move the needle and help people get through plateaus. We've had a guy that like was like longboarding for years and so close to getting to the nose, and then we looked at his fin and we're like, maybe we should try a different fin in your board. The next session, the very first wave, the guy was nose riding.
No way. That's sick.
And so a lot of times it is like, it's not just like what we're doing on the board. It's also the board, the fin, you know, the whole deal. So we really like to bring emphasis to that and in the retreats. And definitely the course on the inertia that I did on alternative surf craft really breaks down the different techniques that we need in order to start riding boards of different sizes and boards with different fin setups, and how that makes the board change the way that it rides. But I really do go in depth on foot placement, which I feel like is the most gold that's in there, that if you can really visually learn to amend the way that we surf, it's in foot placement and in moving those feet. So I do offer a lot in that. And then otherwise, you can reach me on Instagram, at Leah Loves, and, or at Salty Sensations. And I am working on developing a workshop series with Cassia, because I really want to be able to bring together a surf community, and also have these types of discussions in live spaces, where people can ask questions, look at video and whatnot. But, as we all know, like it's really hard to take 20, 30, 40 people surfing at one time. So that it wouldn't necessarily be like an in water thing, but I feel like there's so much that can be learned and passed through, that doesn't necessarily always have to be in the water. And most importantly, it's also connecting community, because I can speak for myself. I surf more when I'm around friends, and especially, you know, if it's pumping and the nerves are going, you know, if you have someone next to you going, oh, let's go, it makes it that much more fun. And I think for people that are, you know, wherever they're at in their surf journey, having more friends to surf with is like the best thing.
For sure. For sure. Well, thank you so much, Leah.
Yeah, for sure, Van. Thank you.
All right.
And hope to see you in the water.